You are the man now. Dog, 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 you are the man now. Dog.
Yeah. Ta 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 ta
ta ta ta. Folks, it's... welcome back to You're the Man Now Dog, now called Man Dog Pod. This is your host, Ryan Rosenberg, with my other co-host with the most, Dan Lippert.
I was going to say you were with the most. You're also with the most.
That's nice.
Hello.
Folks, we're both here, and we're both happy to be back. And just doing a little check-in. That music, of course, was the unlicensed, crappy version of the Olympic song. Because we're right in the middle of the Olympics.
Couldn't afford the licensed one. You all know we shell out money when we can for a good needle drop.
Yes, green needle. Or
green needle.
And you heard that thing where it's like, which of these do you can only hear the one you're reading. And it says like green needle or like sandstorm or, like, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Those things are so weird.
Shame needle.
Yeah.
What'd you hear there, folks?
I wanted to do like a bunch of TikTok videos that were just me going, what do you hear? Green needle. Green needle. What are you hearing? Just do all the other ones.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, those are all the new genres of stuff that exist all of a sudden because of TikTok.
Right.
Like that is such a funny thing that is now normalized in my mind, but it's like, I'm glad you brought it up because if you hadn't, I wouldn't have thought of it as weird.
Yeah, it's so
it's
weird.
Just like a thing that happens now.
Right. Well, Dan, how you doing? I mean, we're just kind of checking in. We're taking a little time off of improv. If you are a patron of us, which you are, if you're hearing this, you probably just heard our voicemail spectacular, which...
if you're in the upper tier.
If you're in the upper tier.
If you're in the upper tier.
If you're in the upper tier, but it is available to you. You know, you're already a patron. You're so close to it.
So close.
And that's where we do a bunch of our comedy from voicemails from listeners like you. Always really fun.
Yeah. That might be the episode, the two-man of the year.
Could be.
We've done a lot of good work. I got to say, the two-man content we're putting out there is spectacular.
We've been on fire lately. It's been a lot of fun.
I'm proud of it, and I think y'all should be so excited that you are of the few on Earth who are hearing this in the whole existence of mankind and womankind.
That's right. It's not that nobody listens to the show. It's that the few that do are really cool and in on it. But thanks for being here. We appreciate you.
Yeah, if you're new to this or if you've been doing this for a while, we appreciate all of you. What we're kind of doing with the setup now is we used to do regular big check-ins once a week during the quarantine. And now we're trying to just do more two-man comedy episodes, but we'll do one check-in a month just to a little... Right. Getting to know you for the listeners that still like to hear Ryan and I chat.
Well, let's be honest. We were a little burnt during the pandemic.
We were a little burnt out.
You were also traveling, doing your movie thing. There was just a lot of moving pieces, and it felt pretty necessary for you and me, honestly, to just check in because we weren't getting to see each other, weren't getting to hang out, and I missed you.
I missed you, too. It was a nice way to kind of stay in each other's lives. Mm-hmm. We have spent more time talking to each other than me and anyone else on Earth.
Yeah, absolutely.
That I've talked to.
Absolutely.
So it's nice to have a friend like
that. Yeah, it's very nice. Well, since we are checking in, what the hell is going on with you? How is your week? How's your month been? It's sort of like the end of July. We're right in the beginning of Augie Doggy, to steal parlance.
Right. To steal the parlance. How is it? I feel pretty good. I think there is a bit of a mind F right now with this feeling of mind freak. I've had Chris Angel coming over and doing tricks for me. This feeling of the thing is done, and essentially we're like back into life, but I'm trying to pull some of what I liked about my life during the pandemic into life. But I'm also not, you know, I'm not getting, it's not like things just opened up and I'm getting all the opportunities in the world. Mm-hmm. So I still have this pandemic amount of free time. Mm-hmm. And so it's a difficult mental and emotional experience to be like, I want to be enjoying my life. I want to be seeing my friends. I want to be like doing things I missed. Mm-hmm. I want to be working. I want to be creative and I want to be making money. But I don't want to get back to exactly what things were like before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And so I feel very...
And we're seeing some of our friends really back out there working in trailers on Instagram, being like, we're out, baby. And I'm like, yeah. Well, some of us.
Yeah. I feel like I'm getting that boat motor going again. Mm-hmm. And it's like kind of like...
Right.
But it's just weird because it's really, we are fortunate enough, but I think to some extent or another, everyone has this opportunity one way or another to be like, what does my life want to be now? Mm-hmm. What do I want it to be? Like, what sort of work do I want to be doing? Mm-hmm. How do I want to spend my time? Do I want my focus to be like money, enjoyment, travel, mental health?
How can I do a little bit of all of those all the time?
Right.
I'm in that zone too. Refiguring it out a little bit.
Yeah, and we happen to be the age where a lot of people make those big decisions, mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, it feels like a complicated time for my brain, because it's like, what do I want, right. even?
Yeah, I kind of had to rewire my brain from what I thought I wanted at the beginning of pandemic to pandemic brain. And mm-hmm. now I'm like unwiring that. And it's like, wait, but we just figured it all out. We just finally got those new wires nailed in there, and now it's like, oh, those are useless now. What is it like? Because I don't want it to be how it was before. But yeah, a lot of changes. It can be tough.
I feel like it's almost like what a lot of people go through right after college. Mm-hmm. But like for me, I had my trajectory. I was like, I want to do comedy. I know where to go to do comedy. Mm-hmm. I know where I can live to act and do that. And so it was really easy for me to follow that. And now I feel like that thing where it's like, now that I've done those things, now what do I, now I'm like my second post-college almost.
Well, and it's also really strange because we're back in the world, but the UCB hasn't opened up. And that's always been such a like void filler for me, even if it wasn't like adding to my creative professional life or making me money or whatever. It was at least like an identity to go to, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and now that that's gone, I'm like, oh, I really have to like make my identity myself and put it out into the world rather than just go to a place where I know who I am. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. You've like removed all of the external sources that are self-defining, uh-huh. and now you just have to look inward.
Right. Which is like a tough task, but also a good one, I think, like for the future and knowing yourself going forward and making all those choices rather than like letting the thing you do define you. You know what I mean? I don't
know. We're in our Yeezus period. What if you take away all of this chipmunk production sound and this soul and it were just hard beats and our voice? That's right. What is this?
That's right. But I think we're figuring it out. I'm excited to be doing more creative stuff. We got some Big Grande creativity going, which is really exciting.
We do.
Anybody who's listening who's a Big Grande fan, we got some more stuff brewing, and that's really fun. And I'm also excited about the extra comedy we're doing here. It feels like we're getting back into gear a little bit. In pandemic, I was a little bit like, do I really want to be funny today? And now I'm like, yeah, I like it. I like doing the comedy parts, not just the talking parts.
Yeah, I imagine part of that, at least for me, is that I have been doing other things in my life so that then I can come to here like with a refilled tank of humanity that then I can like do stuff instead of like, I've been in my house all day, nothing's new, and now I gotta like invent comedy.
Pretend that it is. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
I am. One of our voicemails from the Voicemail Spectacular episode, a guy was just describing when he got vaccinated. And it reminded me, it feels like a million years ago, but like how hard it was to get vaccinated, all the work I did for it, the like emotional experience of getting vaccinated for me. Like when I talked to the woman, I like teared up. And I got so upset that it is the opposite of what other people think. Mm-hmm. That it's like, we're back to this reset of like, it's masks. It's, I think, okay. Right. But it's like, I once again have to put my life on hold in some sort of way.
Right.
Even just like this Big Grande stuff we're planning. It's like, okay, now we got to, that some of this was audience involved stuff. Mm-hmm. And so we got to figure that out now. It's just, you know.
Yeah, it's tough. You want things to be reliable. And it's annoying when they're not.
And it's tough to just see, like, the villain of society has presented itself. And it feels pretty insurmountable. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like we have ended the pandemic and we are looking at all these villains. We're looking at, like, unchecked capitalism, which created global warming. We're looking at, like, unchecked capitalism and how, like race and, like, income inequality. And then we're also looking at unbelievable, like, split in society. Just an unfixable split. Right. That is, like, we kind of knew about, but there's a really clear test of it now.
Right.
The test is, like, did you get the thing?
Right.
And it is directly affecting us in a way where it could be under the surface before.
Right. Do you feel scared of getting COVID again like you did in the beginning?
No, I do still feel the fear. Like, that is in me. Like, I can't be scared of a thing for a whole year and a half and then just be like, oh, it'll be okay if I get it. Like, it's still in me now that that is a monster that I should be scared of. But it's more, I think, the fear of, like, I have roommates. I don't want to, like, you know, one person who's vaccinated getting a breakthrough case, like, odds are it's a minor cold or whatever. But, once you expand out to the people in your life that could get it, like, you're just increasing the odds that someone could get it worse.
Right.
And I don't want to. I feel a lot of, like, responsibility to not be the one to introduce it to everyone in my life.
Right. Yeah.
How about you?
I don't know. I'm really trying not to. Maybe it's selfish, but I'm just trying to, like, focus on myself and what I can control. I feel like that I did a lot of, like, being mad throughout the pandemic and everything, and it just didn't really help me very much. And so I'm really trying not to be angry about it. And I'm just trying to, like, do my best, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe that's just a little bit of, like, dissociation or whatever. But I just found that, like, the anger didn't help me personally. It kind of made me feel bad. And so I'm trying to be like, well, I feel safe and I know what I'm doing in terms of taking risks and stuff. And I guess that's more where my focus is. But
right.
I don't know. Like, we have a trip planned to Vegas because we were all, like, excited that everything feels good and everything like that. And now the Delta is coming and people that we know are getting it. And people that are even going to be on the trip with us got it or whatever. So it's like, oh, it's very close to home. And going to Vegas and being a casino does feel like a pretty high probability place of all the places you could go.
Right. It's, I think 80% of the cases in Nevada are in Vegas, and they are now requiring masks in Nevada. They just, like, passed that, reintroduced that rule, and that's another part of it that's like, I just don't really want to be at a craps table with my mask on.
Right.
Like, that's also not fun.
Right.
So I think I spend a lot of time pushing aside the things that frustrate me.
Mm-hmm.
Being like, well, that's frustrating and sad, but that's, you know, whatever. I can't control it. That's frustrating and sad. I can't control it, whatever. And it's just hitting me how sad and angry it makes me that, like, you know, every cold someone gets has to be scary because of, like, political selfishness and then, like, individual selfishness.
Right.
And like, it's, like, really deeply, I don't even know what the word is. It's just, like, it feels insurmountable, I guess.
Just exhausting, right? It's like
And exhausting,
You're only one person, and it feels like, I don't know, 100 million people are doing the thing that is frustrating.
And, yeah, just the lesson of life is, like, but I did everything right. Well, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
It still didn't work out for
you. Right.
But anyway, that's, I think, unless you have anything to add, I put a pin or put a bow on that conversation.
No, I think I feel all that same stuff. I do. And then it's like, well, it sucks that it's true, but it is. So I kind of feel like I have to like accept that truth and be like, and what do I want to do for me? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And it's hard to put it aside because it right. feels so, like you said, insurmountable or exhausting or whatever. But yeah, trying not to let that like control my whole thought process because it often does. So I'm trying to be like, okay, I got that part. I've thought about it in all of the ways that I need to think about it. And what else do I want to think about? You know?
Yeah.
So I agree.
I think one thing that I wasn't really doing that I thought was interesting that I noticed other people were, and not in a right and wrong way, but like I was not going out and marking people and being like, who is breaking what my rules are? Who should I judge? Mm-hmm. Who's not where? I was just kind of like, I'm going to be out in the world. Everybody's doing a different thing. I don't know what anyone's story is. But I noticed a lot of people being like pissed at other people's mask, what other people do post-vaccine. Mm-hmm. And oddly, that was not a thing that I thought much about because I felt like maybe safe, I guess, or whatever. But yeah, I don't know what that thought is. I got a book recommendation.
Mm.
I just started it. I couldn't sleep last night, so I think that is. Can you sleep? You've changed your schedule.
I hate it. It's the number one thing that I wish I could make my life better.
Yeah. Even with your, because you're, how is this going? You're trying to be 10 o'clock. You're trying to end your night. You're trying to wind down.
Yes. Those rules have, I was just out of town visiting friends. And so I wasn't really able to keep it there. And it's still good. I am going to bed routinely earlier and getting up routinely earlier. But it hasn't really been like 10 and 6 like I wanted to, which I'm okay with. It's like moving in the direction that I want, you know? But I'm still finding that like I stick to the 6 more than I stick to the 10. And so it just makes me really tired. Like you can't stick to the wake up if you're not sticking to the bedtime, or else you just lose an hour of sleep a night every week, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm hoping that if I stick to the wake up time, it will like... And it has proven to, like, make me tired enough that I just fall asleep at, like, 10. Like, because I have to. You know what I mean? And so I'm hoping to, like, force that schedule on myself until it feels... And I'm sleeping with my windows open so that when the sun... Or not the windows, but the shades. So that when the sun comes in, it, like, is bright. And I, you know, gives me the signal that it's day.
Right. That's nice.
It's good. I mean, it's still working, but it has made me tired in the short term.
I feel so,
like, what do you think keeps you from sleeping? Is it the during the night sleep, or is it the amount, is it like the willpower or lack, for lack of a better word, to like do it on times?
I think I got into a pattern where I would like turn on my video games late or whatever, was hanging out with friends more, just like wasn't on a consistent schedule. And I think I wait till I'm so tired that I just conk out usually. If I'm not so tired, every thought that I have been avoiding all day then is like, all right, it's my time to be addressed. Mm-hmm. And so I'm laying in bed and I'm like thinking through whatever it is. Like,
right.
I don't even know of what course. I'm thinking about.
Everything.
The Delta, whatever.
Anxiety, basically.
Yeah. So, and I think like so much of, with this technology, but like the way life is right now is everything exists to distract you from your anxieties, but also gives you other things to be anxious about and perpetuates them, whether it's like the phone, the video games, watching movies, whatever. And so I'm getting new ones because I'm seeing that. I mean, last night, we'll see what happens where this comes out in 5 days. But like that Bob Odenkirk, he like passed out on set. And I was like, that made me really sad and worried and started thinking about just like the randomness of health and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And like it's, I don't know.
When you have like serious
I hope he's okay
thoughts
too.
Like that or whatever, like how do you... do you have like a healthy way to deal with them? Or do you feel like sort of controlled by them?
I feel scared of them, probably.
Scared of like your own thoughts or feelings or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. I think like I have been much more focused on the lack of guarantee of health and life. And so when I see somebody else who seemed young and healthy, like Bob Odenkirk, like get rushed to the hospital, it makes me be like, oh, that's right. He doesn't have it, which means I don't have it. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I don't know that I have like a system. I don't like journal, or I don't go like, this is a fear thought or whatever.
Right.
Like I think I have the tool somewhere, but I don't like open that box up very often.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about you?
I don't know that it's like a specific set of tools, but stuff that helps me is like realizing that like I'm bigger than my thoughts, you know, and that like they're just something that come and go and that I get to watch them rather than like I am made of them. Like I'm not made of my thoughts. I'm not stuck with them. I can just be like, oh, okay, I'm feeling really upset, and then go like, okay, I'm feeling upset, but sometimes I don't feel upset. You know, sometimes I feel really happy, and sometimes I feel, so it like reminds me that like feelings are temporary. And so like that gives me a little bit of solace, because it's like the feeling is scary, right? But, or the feeling is whatever it is, but then the, what I apply to that is sort of the thing that I've found keeps bothering me. Like if something is scary to me, I go like, oh no, I'm scared. Shoot, I hate being scared. I can't be scared. I hate this feeling of scaredness. And it's like, well, yeah, but then you're like kind of stuck in that cycle, you know, or this is for me anyway. And so I'm just trying to be like, okay with the feeling initially, so that I'm not like fighting that I'm having it. Does that make sense? Like, yeah, just be scared for like 5 whole minutes. And then it will change, rather than being like, I'm not scared. I'm okay. It's all okay. It'll be okay. Like that I have found like perpetuates my feelings, you know, because I'm like not processing them and not giving them their due or whatever. But usually as soon as you like give them their due, they go like, okay, I'm satisfied. You know, you know, you're scared, you know, you're upset, you know, you're whatever. Now your like adult mind can come back in and be like, and you're also okay, you know, and like you're safe in your house right now. And so it's helpful for me to like slow down and like realize that I am having thoughts, but that I am not made of only thoughts, if that makes sense.
Right.
That's sort of my thing.
That's helpful. That's a good way to think about it. I appreciate that perspective.
Yeah, totally. It's something I learned in therapy. You know, if you over-identify with your thoughts, you're going to feel crazy all day because your thoughts change all day. You know, and that's okay.
Yeah. It's very Eastern.
Well, you know, I did go to Thailand once. And
you did go to Thailand once.
I'll tell you what, though, that trip really did change a lot of my perspectives. You know, we did a scene in the old voicemail spectacular that I don't know if people have heard yet or not. But it was sort of like mind expanding when I went, you know, because I went to a bunch of like temples and read stuff that I had never read. And like, it wasn't forced on me, you know, somebody wasn't like, read this, it's a good idea for you. It was more like, whoa, this has been just going on for thousands of years and other people know this stuff, and maybe I'll check it out, you know.
Yeah,
anyway,
that's great. Yeah, I have this like very American centric view of like Thailand, where it's like I feel like I would feel really lost a lot of the time and really like out of place.
Right.
And so I'm like scared of that feeling, I think.
Absolutely.
And like really too big for it.
Right.
Also.
Right. Yeah. Like physically too large to be there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I felt that thing as well. Like all those fears going into it were like very present. And then I went there and it was fine. And that really helped, again, like dissolve a lot of that stuff. You know what I mean? Because it was like, oh, my fears are like false hopes or predictions rather than like things that are happening to me, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was way bigger than everybody there and very noticeable. And a couple times it like got called out or whatever, but then a couple times people are just like, hey, would you like to sit down here at this restaurant? You know, and they're like, yeah, okay. You know, it was cool that it was not as different as I thought it would be. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It was like everything was different and also the same, which yeah. I find to be fascinating every time I travel, of like,
right.
It is different in the way that you think it's going to be different, but what you don't anticipate is that, like, everybody's here just living their lives like you are back home.
Yeah. Know? Their lives are not revolving around you, your appearance in their country.
That's right. That's exactly yeah. right. Which you can extrapolate to everybody, right?
Yeah. I was going to say earlier, and then this reminded me of it. Is last night I started reading A Swim in a Pond in the Rain by George Saunders, which is like...
Was this your book recommend?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. He is a writer. He writes short stories. He's a comedic writer, but a little... I don't know how to describe him. I'm not smart sure. enough. But this book goes through seven like late 1800s, early 1900s, Russian short stories, and he just kind of talks about them and talks about storytelling and writing. He like you read the story, it's like you're taking his master class, basically.
Interesting.
But what one thing it made me think is like reading the first one, which is a Chekhov story, is that thing where it's like you read the first few sentences, and this was written in like 1908 or whatever, and you're like, this could have been written today. Mm-hmm. There's like a universality to just being human. Like you think like, oh, Chekhov in Russia, this is going to be inaccessibly sad or... Sure. And it's like, no, this is... The story is it's called In the Cart, and it's immediately about like a woman whose life is the same every day and she's bored with it, kind of is... Mm-hmm. But what he talks about, I'm very early into it, which... He just like makes you look at story in a way that I never do. I don't like think about it, but he's like, every sentence is, as you're reading it, setting up an expectation of something new.
Right.
Everything you say sets up an audience expectation that then it needs to be paid off. And I thought that was really interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't really know why, maybe because I just don't think of story that much, mm-hmm. but it's like, if you introduce a character, I, as the audience member, am having all these thoughts and feelings immediately about what I think is going to come from that character.
Right.
And you have to be aware of that expectation all the time and pay it off or not. But it made me think of like what we do in comedy and mm-hmm. stuff. And like it just feels like I'm just sitting and yelling into a microphone sometimes. But it's like interesting to think of like, you know, I think You Should Leave is a great example that we talked about a little bit. Like every sketch he does, each new character... The experience of watching it, you're like, okay, is this the guy mm-hmm. who's going to be the weird mm-hmm. one? Or like, is the, and part of the fun of the show is you're watching each sketch with all this expectation of what you're going to be laughing
right.
at. And they either pay it off or surprise you in an interesting way.
Right. Right. It's not like everybody is equally normal except for the guy in the wig. It's
yeah.
like, well, yeah, I think this is going to be about the guy in the wig, but what's up with this guy over here at the table too? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, you can't like relax as much. You have to go like, wait, do I get it?
Yeah.
Which I kind of like.
And I think like of entertainment and so much as a passive experience, mm-hmm. but it's interesting to think of yourself as in the audience as like a very active
totally.
Participant in every step of the way. You are forming all these thoughts and mm-hmm. it forces or asks you to like, be aware of your experience as you read a story
right.
or as you watch something. You're not just sitting there being told one.
Right.
Each new thing you're hearing, you're creating like a universe for yourself
right.
of expectation and feeling. You're annoyed, you're hopeful, you're bored, whatever.
Right. And conversely, as the author, to be aware of that as well, that whether or not
yeah.
you intend to, they're going to put meaning to each thing that you purposefully put in there, right? Like, that was
right.
on purpose. Or if it wasn't, why did you tell me that?
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I am, my brain is like too organized in that way of like, if this isn't germane to the story, why are you talking to me about this? Like
right.
almost like, yeah, I don't know. I feel sometimes when I'm in conversations with people, even I'll be like, listen, you started talking about this and then you started talking about this. How does this relate to that?
Yeah.
Okay, because I'm still trying to get the point of what you're saying. But if
right.
you're just saying 10 different things, like, you're confusing me. don't you know about this thing where each thing you say, I'm following with you? You know, like, I get very frustrated by that. I think, I don't know what it is. I probably need to figure it out. it's like a selfishness that it's like you're not communicating right for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably, I think like maybe a more, what I think about it, to be less judgmental of you, is what it makes me feel about myself is I am very focused and I get very, I guess I don't like the idea that I am existing outside of this other person that is talking to me. And so if they're telling me something and it's going somewhere else and it's like, well, I'm not your audience.
Exactly.
I'm in a conversation with you and I would like to like,
and it's,
I'm not here for your one person show and your tangents and what this is all very mean and judgmental.
No, of course.
But it's like,
I feel the same way.
That's the part of my brain that's coming out sometimes.
Cause I feel like you and I can be like hyper people pleasy. And it's like, we're always trying to take care of the other person in the conversation.
Right.
And it's like a talent of ours. You know, it's like what I mean to communicate. I really mean to communicate it. And for me, it's a big point of connection. You know what I mean? Like, I'm telling you this in a way that you will understand and enjoy so that we can really connect on what we're talking about.
Right.
But because I have worked on that so hard and I'm like pretty decent at it, I can be like shitty when other people don't behave that way. You know what I mean? Like, I put the expectation that I have on everybody else and it's like, but I also fall short in stuff that they want. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it's hard. It's like, I can't believe you're not considering me right now. It's like, I got pretty mad pretty quick.
I'm working with an acting coach right now. And one thing she like really focuses on is self-consciousness. Mm-hmm. Like the death of good acting is self-consciousness, self-awareness. And like her big focus is like finding the scene and the need in the other person, in their eyes specifically, and like your actual connection with them. And she talks about how much in life that we don't do that. It made me think of why Zoom is so frustrating, because Zoom makes me very self-conscious.
Right.
I can never be fully
totally
present because I see myself.
Right.
And I can't lock in with you because I'm thinking about how you're seeing me. Can you tell I'm looking in your eyes? Do I look weird? Like, is my hair weird? Is my camera like, I am self-conscious. I'm not present fully. Mm-hmm. But I think to get all the way back to this point, I think that is a way for me that I can lock in a little bit is be like, okay, the point of this interaction is not, I'm not at a movie. So it's not that the story is told well. It's that I need to connect. Mm-hmm. I need to like be not conscious of myself and connect with whatever this person is trying to communicate with me. 'Cause they didn't start talking for no reason. There's something they want me to feel.
Right.
Or see or of them or whatever.
Right. That's interesting.
But sometimes it's just like, shut the fuck up.
Shut the fuck up and do it right. I used to, in the way that you're talking about that book, that resonates most closely with me into like sketch writing. And when I was teaching sketch a lot and had that sort of like epiphany or just it became clearer and clearer that like every line that you write, they hear. So why are you writing each line, you know? And it's not that the script has to be perfect. There's no perfect script, but there shouldn't be anything that's superfluous because it's confusing. You know what I mean? Like, so if instead of telling me like the funny story of your sketch or however you want to say it, you pause to be like, aren't I a funny writer? It's like, that was distracting. That's not the point of the sketch, is that you're a funny writer. Because we don't know who the writer is. We know who the characters are that we're watching. So if you are a funny writer, give the line to the character and make it part of what we're talking about. You know what I mean? Like, there can't just be like other silly stuff. It's like, what are you trying to say? If you knew, you would be saying it more clearly and more directly.
Right.
You know, because when you don't speak clearly and directly, it like puts on the other person that they have to guess what you want them to know, you know? And it's like, no, if you don't care what you're talking about, why do I have to? That's what I really start to resent of like, well, if you don't care what you're saying, I definitely don't care to listen to it. because neither of us care. You right. know, like, I can't attach to something that neither of us value, you know?
Yeah, that's totally true in that. It used to be so hard for me. It might still be. I haven't written for a while to write efficiently.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was because it was like I was so concerned about being understood that I had everybody say everything so much. Mm-hmm. And it was like, well, if you want to be understood, just be short and clear. That's actually how you do it.
Yes.
And also the whole point of creating is you're not going to be understood in the way you want to be. Mm-hmm. You're going to be seen, but you can't tell people how to understand you.
Right.
And I think that's why people overwrite a lot too, is like that what you're saying. I want them to think I'm funny, so I'm putting all these funny little other things in. And it's like, well, you can't control if they think you're funny. Mm-hmm. What you can't control is like, did you do this thing
yes.
that you set out to do?
Yes.
And I think it feels profound to me. I had the thought when I was reading this George Saunders book that it's like the only thing you're trying to do as a creative person is show people yourself. Mm-hmm. And so you're trying to strip off everything else that is not that.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that stands in the way of you showing yourself to people. So in an improv scene, for me, it might be like, I don't want to look goofy. I don't want to seem unfunny. I don't want to look... Right. I don't want to... seem too excited. I don't, you know, whatever these mm-hmm. things are that stop me from people just seeing me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's hard though, because
it's so hard.
You have to come to the decision before you start talking or whatever of what that is that you're saying, which to me is the hardest part. Like, you have to commit to saying something, which is really scary, because once you've committed, people get to go like, yes, or not for me. But if you're a little bit of everything, then like there's something for everybody, but kind of nothing for anybody.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's a thing that I've found too, just in like living life, of like, you can't live to be accepted by everybody, because then everybody will actually go like, who are you?
Yeah.
You know, like, you got to be authentic or whatever. I think it was Brené Brown. Do you know Brené Brown? She writes about like shame and, you know, vulnerability and stuff. She's got a great thing, I think. I mean, I'm sure it's in a book, but in that like Netflix a talk that she does, like a TED talk on Netflix, where she was saying that like fitting in is the opposite of showing up authentically. Because by nature of fitting in, you're like not being yourself. You're being who you think the group wants. So like when you're doing that, you're doing a disservice to both you and them, because they want you to fit in as yourself. Nobody wants a copy of them to walk up and be like, I stole all your stuff. And now I do that now, you know?
Yes.
But it's really scary, because for most of my life, I was like, no, you behave how people want you to so that they like you.
100%.
And it's like, well, to a point, you know, we all have certain things that we have to agree on.
Then all your, you end up with a circle of friends who only like you because they see themselves in you, not because they see you.
Well, and how
you end up with people who are narcissists or whatever, because they didn't want you. They wanted you to be their version of cool.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
But
it's a big thing. I mean, so many, we're all trying to like be accepted, but it's, so it feels counterintuitive, you know?
I was thinking about it. I did like that Bill Walton character on Comedy Bang Bang recently. And I always leave that character feeling like those sessions feeling really embarrassed because the whole idea is like, I lose control.
Yes.
I am talking faster than my brain can.
But that's what's great about it.
So you are seeing all of me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you are seeing me be like goofy, obsessed with the wrong things, a little kid.
Mm-hmm. Like, truly, like, it is trying uncontrolled. My hardest and doing my best, but failing too. Like, if I could rewrite that, I wouldn't have put in all the stammers and all the whatever.
Right.
But that is also what we like about it. Like, we like that we're seeing you authentically trying, because we can go like, if I was that person, where he's laughing is where he's getting nervous, which I identify with, you know? Like,
But then it's like, I leave and I'm like, oh, these, like, the people are going to think I'm like too, like, whatever, loud. Mm-hmm. They're going to think I'm annoying. They're going to think I'm, like, I don't know what. And then I'm like, well, maybe, I guess I am those things. And that's, like, the reality is, like, Yeah, I can be loud sometimes. Right. I can get overexcited and whatever. And it's like, that's the part I want to be better at, is knowing that mm-hmm. that, not like, that just that that's part of me and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And people might see that part of me. And that's the whole thing I signed up for as someone who is trying to perform for people.
Right. Well, even if you have 10,000 people that love your entertainment and everybody else hates it, that's mm-hmm. enough. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like 10,000 people liking your stuff is like pretty big. And I don't need every person in the world to like me, just like I don't yeah. like every person in the world. I'm interested yeah. in almost nobody's art. You know what I mean? Yeah. But some people's art I really, really love, and they seem to be doing great. And the art that I'm not interested in, those people also seem to be doing great. Yeah. You know, like,
and someone else really is interested in their
exactly.
art.
And so I think it's like, connects to it. We really are like so focused on like, what could happen if we mess up? But it's yeah. like, how do you reframe that and go like, what could happen if anybody likes it? What could happen if yeah. I am enough? What could happen if it's like a profound shift of like self-judgment to self-confidence, you know, or judgment to yeah. acceptance in general? You know, it's like, well, I don't really care if other people don't do the thing I like. Good luck. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just like the same, I gotta do that for myself as well. It's like, everybody doesn't have to like this, but I should still try.
Yeah. I thought about it with that Bo Burnham special, because when it came out, I was talking to a lot of people about it, and people have different points of view on it. And some people are like, I don't know, I find him to be a little like self-obsessed, or a little like, what's the word? Like overly, you know, like trying to be smart or whatever, uh-huh. Whatever these things are. And to me, that's kind of like the whole point of what he put out there. The hardest thing in the world is to put out an hour and 15 minutes of just you in your room mm-hmm. and let the whole world get to say that about
right.
you. Like, yeah, he makes a ton of money and it does end up being successful. But the other end of it is you are letting everyone say whatever they want about mm-hmm. you if you sit in a room and show them yourself.
Yeah, and he makes all that money off of the minority that likes him, not the majority yeah. that hates him, you know?
Yeah, and I think that way about like every creative person who it's like, all we see is their successes. We don't, and we judge them, but we don't see the, it is intangible to see the risks that they're taking, which is showing up and being like, mm-hmm. hey, you can say whatever you want about me and I have no control mm-hmm. over it, which is what most of us spend our whole life avoiding.
Right. Right. Yeah. That fear is crushing. And again, yeah. not real. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, or it's not as, all-consuming as I think we think it is when we're like just living in our head. You know what I mean? It's yeah. like, so what if some of that is true? Like, what is the other part that's also true? It's not black and white.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Which I think is a big thinking yeah. shift for me. It, like, things are not binary, even though it's like easier to understand things that way. Nothing in life is a binary.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, except computers.
Except for the zeros and ones,
right,
baby.
Right.
Well, Ryan, another enlightening chat.
Oh, we got to change this to Enlightened Dog Pod.
This is the Enlightened Dog Pod, and it'll be that meme of the brain getting like more and more,
yes.
you know.
Listening to like, the improv episodes.
Yeah.
Listening to the improv episodes where they chat about therapy a little bit. Listening to the check-ins where all they do is talk about, yeah.
All right, folks, send us the meme. We just made it for you. All you have to do is
that's right.
put it out there, tag us in it. A few days later, we'll check our Twitter and we'll retweet it.
Tell your friends, share us, love us, give us props. No, I don't know. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate you guys letting us talk so silly and highfalutin about this shit.
Yes.
Thanks
thank
for not
you
leaving.
For your support. Thank you for not leaving. Please, please never do. Welcome to everybody who's joining us for August.
Right.
And thanks for being here, everyone who's been here for the other months of our lives. Ryan, I love you, man. Good chatting.
I love you too, my dude.
Big ups to Casey Trella for the music.
Big ups to Annie Wu for the logo.
And big ups to Brian Holmes for editing and production work. And big ups to Ryan, who brought back the end of the episode credits and thank yous, which... I am sad we haven't been doing for a while, so I'm glad we brought him back to give credit to the good people that helped.
That's right. We really appreciate him. It takes a village.
It takes a village.
To raise a little podcast.
Bye.
Bye-bye.